Mr. Malucci, thank you for your candid responses to the questions you were given. I would add one final thing to the good neighbor agreement, should we move forward with this application, and it addresses Commissioner Cronin's concerns and Mr. Gasser's concerns that he brought up in the last meeting, which was that, and you did state that this would be the plan, but I think I would like to see it in the agreement that there would be some immediate response guaranteed, especially for noise complaints and any other disruptive behavior in the neighborhood. So rather than a 24-hour turnaround, you would make available an immediate resolution to those complaints.
I don't know if we'll get a resolution, absolutely, but we would respond.
Attempt an immediate
respond. And we
immediately respond.
We could do flyers too. And the neighborhood agreement also says that we will meet with the neighbors or any neighborhood association anytime per request.
Great. I have no further questions.
But on that very, very same line, is what will be the function of the staff at the building that will be there, and why can't they be the first responders to community concerns? Is that
hopefully they will be. Hopefully they'll be talking to the neighbors. And
well, I mean, it could be an expectation of the staff job is to be the bummer of your job is you have to be open to all the neighbors when they have problems and be the person that talks to them immediately, gets some process satisfaction, and then gets you on the cell phone. I guess if there was already a couple of staff there and I had a problem, I'd want to go over and knock on the door and they'd probably answer. It'd be great if it was part of their job to at least make me feel good for a little while, stop what's going on, and get you on the phone. I mean, tell me why that can't be a little staff.
That's an expectation of my manager up in Westport to talk to the neighbors and deal with any issues.
And so such a thing could also be reflected in our good neighbor agreement. That wouldn't be onerous for the staff person. I guess, okay, it seems that there could be this one person that was that one stop kind of.
Locale is always a very important thing in terms of resolving conflict.
Correct. And even if it's not bloodletting or anything, to have that face-to-face understanding that something needs to be addressed is very satisfying.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Corker. Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Malucci.
Thank you.
We are going to recess for 5 minutes. It is currently 7:53. We'll return at 7:58. Okay, we'll restart. We'll reopen the restart the meeting. It is 7:59. Once again, public testimony is still open. If you wish to speak, come to the podium, state your name and address for the record. We are taking presentations by persons in favor of the application. We've heard from the applicant. If any other members of the public would like to make a presentation in favor of the application, please come forward now. All right, seeing none, is there a presentation by persons who would speak impartial to the application? No volunteers. Is there a presentation by persons who would speak against the application?
Yes.
Come on up. First come, first served. You can make a line if you would like.
Hi, my name is Michelle Adams. I'm at 349 Melbourne Avenue, Astoria, Oregon. I'm going to try to get through this in 3 minutes, but
thank you.
It's a lot to cover. I'm Michelle Adams. I'd like to oppose the temporary use application by Pacific Seafood CU 19-21 because I'd like to challenge that this is a temporary use more appropriate for a temporary use application. And it does not meet the basic conditional use standards in Article 11.04 of the Astoria Developmental Code. Please note the Planning Committee in the last week's hearing, and also today, the applicant had a hard time describing what kind of use that actually was. He actually, in quote, said that he couldn't even find a use maybe not exactly to quote, I'll cut that. He said he couldn't find a use anywhere in the country that was similar to this use. So my goal is to try to help define what type of use it actually is for. Let's see here. I'd like to challenge that CU 1921's actual defined use is associated and similar to the use of a hotel, which is not appropriate for R3 zoning. This is conditional use. And it would be a non-conformative use per Astoria Developmental Code, Article 3.108. A non-conforming use may be changed to a conforming use. However, after a non-conforming use is changed to a conforming use, it shall thereafter not be changed to a use that does not conform to the use zone in which it is located. And that's in that non-conformative use article. So let's try to define what kind of use this applicant is intending. The applicant will be using 265 West Exchange Street, as I believe, for transient lodging. As evidence of, the applicant argued that dorms are necessary to allow new Warrenton plant to allow the new Warrenton plant to operate at full capacity during the busy summer months. That was stated at last week's hearing. I did hear that from applicant. ORS defines transient lodging as a means of room or suite of rooms that is not occupied as a principal residence by persons or periods of less than 30 consecutive days, or with which the services normally offered by hotels, including but not limited to daily or bi-daily maid and linen services, a front desk, and a telephone switchboard are provided, regardless of the length of occupancy of a person. The applicant did say that they were going to have a door manager and a large linen facility today. In brief, I'll just try to wrap up. Or do I have your permission to continue? I am over halfway done. Okay. So, ORS defines a property and a hotel. ORS defines hotel or inn as a means of renting out rooms or suites. I'm paraphrasing at this point, generally are rented as transient lodging and not as principal residences. The company has a proven track record of providing work housing for 200 employees and rented motels and hotels elsewhere along the Oregon coast during the busy summer months. I would like to claim that this proves that that motels and hotels meet the needs of Pacific Seafood, and they are looking for housing for 200 visa workers that do not have a primary residence here in Oregon.
Thank you, Ms. Adams. We do have your letters also, so we
yes.
Thank you.
The whole thing too.
Good evening, my name is Mary Cole Shaw, and my husband and I own 303 West Exchange, right next to 263. And I know it's a temporary use permit that's being applied for, but I'm worried about it's really being presented over the long term as a permanent use. And the reason I say that is that the city manager had mentioned at the beginning of last week's meeting, reminding the commissioners that the rules could be changed. And in the staff report, it recognizes that, quote, the applicant proposes this temporary use until a definition can be provided that includes this use, end quote. It's reasonable to assume that from the staff report and the other comments that it's possible that during the 1 year temporary permit process, that there's going to be some added language so that workforce housing can be added to the approved list of R3 zone uses. I'm very concerned about this process and how much the city of Astoria has looked at vacation rentals, ADUs, and really put some tough restrictions on it, but we don't have hard restrictions on 263 Exchange. I know why it's great for Pacific Seafoods. I'm not sure why it's good for the neighborhood or Astoria. That was brought up by a commissioner as a question. Hoteliers come to us and let us know why it's good, but we never heard a response as to why it's good for the community of Astoria. A decision by the Planning Commission needs to show that the application would not be arbitrary and capricious. The commission is required to base its decision on whether the use complies with the standards set forth in the ADC 11.020B. There's 7 categories in that standard. At least 4 apply here. Only 2 have been addressed by the applicant or by the staff report. The 2 that are left off are subsection 5 regarding development standards and 7 whether it complies with the appropriate conditional use standards. In regards to the density standard, even bringing the numbers from 125 down to 80, the density standard would still be an extreme digression from what the standard is by about 260%. In regards to capital investment, I know there's been some talk about that, but I would think that in order to make a full and proper decision, that there would need to be a list of what the capital improvements are and the appropriate and the corresponding cost. For these reasons, I would ask that the application not be granted. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Coltshaw.
My name is Rick Vandenberg. I live across the street at 244 West Exchange. One property line down from that, I'm going to be directly affected by these guys. And I'm not totally against the building being used. I mean, it should be used. But going from 30 rooms to 80 people, to me, I find, you know, they made it sound like I think they're psychics. I've gone from 125 to 80, but I still think that's a high number. I'm trying to be linear here, but I also want to know what the turnover rate, if they had 80 people, does that really mean 160 people by the time people go? Because I'm also worried about the smoking thing you guys had up there. People throw their cigarette butts in the street. Most people that smoke, they don't look for ashtrays. And, you know, sure, on that campus, they're going to be... Okay, so I'm sorry I'm rambling here. But like the driving, the right-angle streets on the buses, that like you go down Lincoln, you hit a right-angle street, there's no visibility. I mean, what can happen if you hit a car or something? Okay, and the laundry facility, if it's only set up for 30, how are we going to have it for 80 in the kitchen without it with minimal expenses? Well, I mean, who gets to decide what minimal is? Okay, I like the fact that there could be a phone number to call in case there is complaints. And then I like this one number. Number four, C11.020B13CP220.6. If I had to sit here and talk about all the numbers, I'd use only 3 minutes. But it says the standard is not met on that particular one. I might digress a little bit, but I've talked to some people that know the place in Hammond, and they have apartments, I was told, and I can't verify absolutely, but they have apartments. They were told there was only going to be 4 people to an apartment. Now they have 8, and the owner is trying to get them to 50. The owner's name is Dick Kruger. If you want to check that into it, that's what I heard. I don't have absolute proof of that. And I also heard there's 5 backup offers to this building. There are other people that are interested in it, not just these guys. I would like to be able to complain if I have any complaints. But I'm not against the whole idea of the building being used. It's not my home. But when it was used with 30 people, I still had traffic problems in front of my house. Even though now they're going to use the 12 spaces, but even then with 30, they blocked my entrance to my house many times. And it was not fun. But 80 would be like, I can't imagine 80 people with only 12 cars. I don't know. I was like, it's a good thought.
Thank you, Mr. Rannenberg.
Hello, my name is Jason Lysette. I live at 183 West Grand Avenue, which is right above the facility we're talking about. I just have taken a few notes during the meeting that I would like to have you think about as the council. Specifically, mostly towards the comprehensive plan, but also about the zoning. The facility is part of the R3 zone. If you look at the map again, it was on one of the first 2 slides. Lincoln is really the border for the R1 zone, which a lot of us live in. So really, like, my house is right across Lincoln from the facility, and we're all in this R1 zone, which hasn't really gotten much consideration, I don't think, during a lot of these proceedings. And I just hope that the city considers not just the impact on the R3 zone there, the green zone, but if you drew a circle, there's a pretty large swath of the R1 low density that would be impacted by this. My kids wait on the corner for the bus right out there. And it's a very sharp corner. It's an unsafe corner. And I wanted to point out, if you haven't been to the site, that the back driveway goes up to Lincoln Avenue. It's not part of the drive there on Exchange. And so this would be all the employee cars would be funneling out, not into the R3 zone, but they funnel right out into the R1 zone, which is the low density. So I really recommend that the council considers the impact on the adjacent zones, not just the R3 zone that the facility is in. And especially for the shuttles, I think if you've ever gone down that street that Astoria Point is on, it's very narrow, it's in terrible condition. There is a 90-degree turn going down to a playground that is very unsafe. It's just kind of a traffic nightmare in that whole area, because my daughter just got her license, and I can attest to that. So it's not a good area, especially to put some big shuttles into. I just really hope that the city's considered the size of these shuttles, and they better know what size they're going to be, how often they're running, and if there's room for them to fit down the streets. And then I also jotted down parking enforcement, so I just hadn't heard much from the city as far as whether or not the city was on board to enforce any of the spillover parking that might occur beyond the facility and what they've offered. Because there, I don't believe there are any signs along Lincoln that say no parking. There definitely aren't any along West Grand, mostly because it's the slopes and the hills there. It's not easy to park, but it's a little startling to think that this might be approved without some of these assessments having taken place. It doesn't sound like they have for the impact on the adjacent neighborhood.
Thank you, Mr. Vincent.
I'm Bob Levine, P.O. Box 1082, Astoria, Oregon. I really wasn't planning on saying too much tonight, but the applicant stated something that concerned me. He said basically anybody could walk into Pacific Seafood and get a job, and that really concerns me. One of the things is I know myself and my neighbors are concerned about getting every employee as well as the staff, if this thing gets approved, to get background checks. And they have to go through the Astoria Police Department to verify that we're not getting anybody that is in trouble. Also, the applicant stated that there are no similar types of housing arrangements. I would take exception to that and say there are tons of those sitting in the state of California, especially on farms and things like that, where during the picking season, the farmers provide worker housing on site. And I think that's something that could be considered here, Pacific Seafood even putting mobile homes on their site and housing people actually there, since they're temporary workers. And then the other question that I have, I think they made it stated that the employees are, that they're using are actual employees of Pacific Seafood. I just would like to have that verified, because I'm not sure they are, whether they're through a temp agency or something like that. Thank you.
Tim Green, out of 388 Lincoln. So my bedroom looks directly at the rec area and the Gassard's driveway and home. And actually, my biggest concern is that this really hasn't been discussed this way. There's, when Astoria Point was there, there was an enormous amount of traffic generated by delivery trucks, food service, and I just don't know that it's quite as simple as it makes it sound. I'm really pleased that Commissioner Price brought up the fact that garbage service when Astoria Point was there happens at 1 to 2 a.m. 3 days a week, woke me up regularly until they replaced their truck, which was going up Hume and Lincoln and created an enormous amount of sound. Now it's a little quite a bit quieter, but it hasn't happened for 2 years since we've. But my biggest concern is the parking on West Exchange. And in the past, when Astoria Point was there, the employees would park on West Exchange on the, I guess it would be the south side, up against the bank there, and which is fine. If people can park where they need to park, as long as they're not in the street. In the past, and I've had police officers that I've discussed with this, you know, there's cars parked in the street there. We need to drive through there. And it's really hard because when you're going to that blind corner, a lot of people want to swing wide to get around. And if there's cars parked on the pavement, it causes a problem. So since you're also involved with traffic commission, I like that from Melbourne to the entrance to Astoria Point on West Exchange, there needs to be no cars on the pavement. If they get off the pavements, that's fine. But that's my biggest concern. I'm in and out there regularly every day. and it's hard to negotiate. And Melbourne is just a nightmare because it's really bad there. But anyway, I think what I want to discuss. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Are there any further presentations by those opposed to the application?
David McAfee, 238 West Exchange. I'd just like to expand on what he was saying. West Exchange and that block is just a nightmare. That buses that you're going to use, and I used to be a Carson driver, they won't access that. You can't make a right-hand turn off of Melbourne onto their property. The service vehicles have to proceed down Exchange through all those cars that are parked, like you say, on the sidewalk, on the street. Generally, they're off the street. But even when they're off the street, it makes that piece of Exchange one lane, one way. So if you've got a commercial vehicle coming up that lane, all traffic stands still. Now, with the last people there, that happened once a day. This is going to happen 8-10 times a day, insane hours. It's going to be a mess. It's going to be a total mess. The upper parking lot, I don't know if that's accessible to most cars. It probably is to a lot of SUVs, pickups, stuff like that. It may be accessible to their buses. From my point of view, I'd rather see that be the point of unloading and loading, the back parking lot. But they would have to put a capital investment in. Which brings me to the point of this looks to me like you're trying to decide if you're going to okay that piece of Exchange to become a hotel properties. And if you are, then we'll just make that decision and let's get a really good hotel firm to put a nice operation in it. And then let's get these guys a piece of property where they can put in a really nice facility for a barracks for these migrant workers. These are not Americans. When you're talking about this covering the needs of what Oregon's trying to do, they're trying to provide housing for citizens. They're not trying to provide housing for people from Nicaragua, to come up here and work for 4 months. These people should have built that when they recapitalized. And I'm sure they're seeing that now. Anyway, I'll quit around. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McAfee. Any further presentations by those opposed to the application?
Since I don't think I used my full 3 minutes, so Paul Levine again.
I'll give you 30 seconds.
You got it. Just concerns the parking issue, and I just want to make an assurance that the applicant only parks any of their vehicles on site. They do not use any public street parking. We make that part of it. If by some quirk you approve this, but that becomes part of the good neighbor agreement.
Thank you, Mr. Levine. Any further presentations by those opposed?
Hi, I'm Bryce Zinski. I live at 270 West Exchange Street, which is at the corner of Melbourne and West Exchange. And I empathize with Pacific Seafoods and their employees, but I don't know that this is a solution for them. There'd be better uses for that property. The infrastructure in that area, the streets, especially Melbourne Street, could certainly use some help, sidewalks. And I've noticed through the years the continual erosion of the bank there, that corner with trucks coming around that corner and driving up on the bank and eroding it further. It's just an indication of just how much traffic is through there. So that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you very much. Are there any further comments on those who are opposed to the application? Seeing none, we'll have
Board. Can I make one more?
Yeah. 30 seconds. At the microphone, please.
Okay, I'm David again. As my point about the exchange and what a poor thoroughfare it is. Is it Lincoln? Lincoln is a four times the width exchange. Four times. It's as wide as Marshall. Why don't we make think if you're gonna do this, look at Lincoln. And it's gonna make a lot of people mad. But, I mean, I'm talking about no Melbourne, no Lincoln coming off of commercial at all for those commercial vehicles. I'm talking about coming in from the upside. If they couldn't access it that way better.
All right, thank you.
You know, short of the city or the county doing something about those roads.
Thank you, sir. Any further presentations by those opposed to the application? This time, we'll have an opportunity for the applicant's rebuttal.
President, commissioners, community members, my name is Mike Luigi for the record for Pacific Seafood. As to the rebuttal, I would like to comment on a few of the concerns of the community and the neighborhood. I want to put this in somewhat of context. And Garrett will respond and make final findings or arguments. The facility, in my understanding, housed at 1.8 people. And that housing is community members who state it's 30 or so, it's 40 beds. And it's a large facility, and those 40 beds don't occupy all the rooms because at some point it was a treatment center and it had to have medical and kinds of things. So I walked through the facility, and certainly we could talk to the seller's agent, and the neighborhood could walk through the facility. It's a large facility. As to the use, you certainly know more about permitted use, outright use, conditional uses under an R3 zone. That piece of property has a very limited use in terms of my brief, fairly extensive assessment. And as you look at the outright permitted use versus conditional use, I'll just run through some of them. It's single family dwelling, two family dwelling, multifamily. It jumps to home occupation, daycare center, manufactured home. Cities generally do not, in my experience, do not want manufactured homes. They're really out sort of not wanting manufacturing. I can't speak for the city of Astoria, but my experience is that those homes are really not built very well. Any sort of outright or permitted use that doesn't meet these criteria, and they don't pencil out in terms of a business analysis. You can't put a single family, two family dwelling, even if you could get an occupational right to it. You'd have to get up to the 2020 code zone, the code, and it costs you a significant amount of capital investment, at least over $1 million in terms of sort of getting that thing improved in terms of environmental issues, non-environmental issues in terms of but in terms of windows, heating, and things like that. So when I looked at that piece of property, I looked that it was in some ways perfect for our use. When you look at retirement homes, large corporations are buying retirement homes. In my assessment, I can't speak for the seller, those don't pencil out. Treatment centers generally don't pencil out, being a former prosecutor and criminal lawyer, because treatment people generally don't have money in terms of the copay and things like that. So the wish that that facility could be something else, unfortunately, in my brief experience, it is limited. But I can't speak for the seller. I can only speak for my assessment of what that property is can mean for Pacific Seafood. Second, in terms of a motel, Once we disclose, in the summer, you can't touch a motel and Astoria warrant. They're filled up by vacationers. And if we can get those kind of rates, we can't afford them. I mean, you know, $183 for a motel for our workers. It doesn't make business sense. And you can look at the numbers, 200 people. So when people say, I'm putting people in Newport, I'm looking at purchasing motels. And I have a down payment on a motel right now. So I'm in the process of acquiring property for workforce housing, and there's negatives and positives. If I take a motel off of the city tax roll, that impacts the city's budget. I don't really want to do those kinds of things because, and I don't want to buy apartments because if I buy apartments, I have to sadly evict people and make the housing crisis even worse. So it's a complicated process or issue that we're all in terms of the community and the city and the discussion, and I certainly have shared and appreciate the dialogue that the citizens have, and by the fact that Pacific's willing or I'm willing to enter a good neighborhood agreement and work with the neighbors, I think much of life is compromise. And I think sadly in some ways our society is not much in terms of compromise, but that's how I hope to live and have lived in the past. Second, I probably didn't clarify that anyone can walk in Pacific Seafood and get a job. They have to be vetted through our HR process. We don't hire sex offenders. They do a criminal background check, so we don't just hire anybody. It was more of a statement that if a person wants to work and can pass our background, they can work. In terms of minor capital investment, that property has been vacant for 2 years. My sense is the seller has deferred maintenance. I don't blame the seller. If you don't have a lease working, you're not going to put a lot of money into your property. Property in terms of coastal property is very expensive to maintain. And so, but I've had a home building inspection, a commercial inspector, local guy, and he's taken apart the building. The minor capital investment is very minimal. There will not be any major capital improvements. It fits. In terms of temporary dwellings, most of the cities I've experienced do not allow temporary dwellings in terms of dropping manufactured homes. If that was in the 60s and 70s, it just doesn't work for cities. And oftentimes it just doesn't meet the safety standards. Even though they're built well, I'm not negatively, in some ways I am, but they're just not structurally built for housing or long-term housing. Finally, our visa workers are here for 7 months. They're not temporary people. We put a lot of investment in terms of bringing them over through the federal government, an approved program to bring people over, and we want them to stay. They want to stay, they want to work hard. All they want to do is work long hours, save up money, and sleep and eat, and go home at the end of 7 months. We would hope, based on the staff findings and our presentation, that you would approve this temporary use. Thank you so much.
Okay, President Moore, members of the commission, appreciate my time. I'll try and make it brief, and I'm not going to try and repeat what Mike just went through. There's going to be two components to my closing presentation today. The first is I just want to clarify a few of the comments that I heard during the public hearing portion, and then once that's done, I'd like to talk about how we might, in terms of this hearing and the mechanics, add some of the...
Sir, can I get you to pause for just a moment? We need to take a brief recess, and we'll bring you back up after the recess. So we're going to recess for 5 minutes. It's currently 8:34. Apologize for that. Okay, thank you. Apologies for that. Break, we'll get started again. It is 8:42.
Thank you, President Moore. Two parts to my closing presentation. The first part, of course, is going to be to respond to some of the stuff we heard. The second is I wanted to talk a little bit about the changes that the commission has requested to the Good Neighbor Agreement. But before I get to that, I think that, you know, a lot of what came out of the public testimony that we just heard are concerns that we were aware of. I think that some of that stuff probably came out during the first hearing, which really animated the content of the Good Neighbor Agreement. Certainly, we understand the concerns about parking and traffic, and that really was on our minds when we drafted or proposed the draft agreement. You know, we believe that the shuttle buses that they're proposing will certainly be adequate. I mean, a lot of this comes down to some level of common sense. Pacific Seafood is not going to invest its time and energy and capital into putting this facility together and arranging for this transportation if the buses can't, if the shuttles can't come and go adequately. So I'm not saying you have to trust us, but I think that the motivations are apparent, because this is a business and we're trying to make this run as effectively as possible. And we, because it's a business and because we care about the community, I think that we're going to do everything we can, should the Planning Commission approve this, to be very diligent in abiding by the provisions of the Good Neighbor Agreement. One clarification, I think it was Ms. Adams' testimony highlighting the fact that somebody said that we couldn't find this type of facility anywhere in the country. What Mike was referring to is the statistical data in the ITE manual has to do with parking. It's not talking about land use. So I just wanted to make sure that I made that particular comment. You know, there's been a lot of discussion about whether or not this is really a temporary use. And in my experience, temporary uses are exactly that. They're defined by their duration, not necessarily the specific activity going on at the site. And in almost every jurisdiction that I've worked in, and that includes almost every jurisdiction in the state of Oregon, the temporary use provisions are all fairly similar. Astoria is a great example of that. It says, a use or activity involving minimal capital investment that doesn't result in a permanent alteration of the site or construction of new buildings and is removed from the site within 1 year unless otherwise extended. The purpose for these types of code provisions, and I presume the purpose for Astoria's temporary use provision, is to allow us to do exactly what we are proposing to do, which is to establish this temporary use, because we can't find anything in the code that specifically says this is where we're going to put workforce housing of this type. So I understand that it's the hope of everybody involved that in the intervening year we work with this Planning Commission to develop amendments to the code that will allow this to continue or come back and seek an extension of the temporary use. As to whether or not this is some other kind of hotel use or other kind of housing use, I encourage you to just use common sense on that. I don't think anybody is going to walk into workforce housing and say, isn't this a hotel? And you know, we certainly worked with staff to come to an agreement on the appropriate application to make. This certainly wasn't Pacific Seafood coming in and stabbing, you know, taking the code, putting it up on the wall and throwing a dart at it and hoping it got the right use. This is a result of a number of discussions with staff, and we feel that we've worked very collaboratively with staff, and staff's been working very collaboratively with us to say that this is what we believe your permit should look like, here's what we think you ought to propose, and we've worked very well with staff on that. So I always want to point out, when we have a positive staff report, that's what you have in front of you tonight. You have a staff report recommending approval with conditions of approval. And I don't think that is nothing. I think that planning staff is very good at its job. It does this a lot, and it's very diligently looked at all of the criteria that apply. Now, I know there's always going to be disagreements. Opponents and proponents always disagree about what criteria apply. That's why you have staff to kind of be the guidepost on that. And I think we agree with the staff report, and we agree with all the conditions recommended by staff. So this leads me to my final point, which is there's a proposal on the table to add a number of things to the Good Neighbor Agreement. And these are items that have been requested by the Planning Commission. And I will go ahead and state what I believe I heard the Planning Commission indicate. And then what I would appreciate is if you say, yes, Garrett, you've got that right, or there's another thing that we want to have there. So what I've got is amending subsection F to indicate that we'll have somebody on staff that will make all reasonable attempts to deal with any complaints or nuisances occurring on the site immediately. That's one of the things I heard. Another thing I heard is that ensure that trash pickup is not happening at all hours of the night, that we are making sure that we are doing whatever we can to be consistent with whatever the residential pattern of trash pickup is. The third thing I heard is that there's a need to designate a specific place on the site for smoking. And then one additional thing, and I'm not sure whether it was a member of the public or this planning commission that mentioned it, but no parking on the street for the residents. So we spoke during one of the recesses. Pacific Seafood is willing to accept all of these conditions. We want to have a decision tonight, and what I, in speaking with staff, what we would like to do is that if the commission is prepared to approve the application, we would go ahead and recommend specific language that could be added as conditions of approval to the decision. The condition basically say the Good Neighbor Agreement shall be amended to include the following, So that's how we would propose to deal with it, however, there's going to be a little bit of a few minutes of just figuring out exactly what that language needs to look like. And in the interest of everybody's time, what I would request that the Planning Commission do is take a straw poll to determine whether or not there's a will to approve the application tonight. If there is, we can talk about the specific language that those additional provisions of the GNA need to look like. But if there's no will to approve it, I don't want to waste everybody's time having that discussion, if it's all right with the Planning Commission.
Did the Commission have any comments on his amendments? I might add that the parking on the street include and guests, should your residents have any guests
come Certainly. In?
There were two others that I mentioned. One was to have neighborhood meetings, or at least one. And the other is to have a flyer with contact information, and names, emails, all of that to give to neighbors and to the city, other interested parties.
I think we would be fine with those.
Okay.
Thank you. Sure.
Yes.
On the parking issue on street, you want to make sure that if there's anything dealing with where people park, that that is something that if you included in the Good Neighbor Agreement, it would need to be that it was something that would be between something that's part of the Good Neighbor Agreement. The city police department cannot issue a citation for someone parked on a public right-of-way regardless of a land use permit, because a public right-of-way is used by everyone, the general public, and so they cannot discriminate.
If I may add on to that, I think the idea would be to require a policy to be implemented by Pacific Seafood saying that your employees, if you're living here, you can't park on the street. It would be up to us to enforce that, as the city manager mentioned. We would, of course, do our best to do so. I'm not going to pretend that that anybody has the resources to monitor on-street parking 24/7. But I think adding that to the Good Neighbor Agreement would be a commitment by us to do our best efforts to make that happen.
Any further commissioners? All right, thank you. Any closing remarks from staff?
Yes, I would like to note that on the conditions of approval, the condition that references the specific numbers of the Astoria Municipal Code should be just the unnecessary noise and public health nuisances. Numbers can change over time, so we want to just reference the requirement, not the specific number in your motion if you choose to include this. And I'll leave it to you for discussion or questions that you might have.
Thank you. If you have any further questions for staff, now is a good time.
It's not a good time, okay. So with regard to the temporary use, because we don't currently have a use that fits very well, and over the course of the next year, a use is expected to be developed for that. Is that part of the plan? I guess where I'm leading to this is, what I like about the temporary use is the annual review. If we're moving towards, in the course of the next year, to make find a use that's appropriate for it to therefore not need the annual review, I'd like to know that.
That would be the subject of your work session. When you meet on your work session next, you could discuss that as an option. That you may not want to have it as a conditional use. You may want to have it as a yearly renewal.
Work session under what subject?
Under the ADU slash housing.
I'm going to say that should not be discussed tonight at all because it would be an ex parte contact.
Well, I was thinking of the actual legislation for future.
Yeah, I think that with the sensitivity of this issue, that I think it's too difficult at this point in time to have a permit and not have any ex parte contact. So I do think that
I retract my question.
But Ms. Fryer's response is perfectly is correct.
Thank you. And that's all I need.
That basically the issue was discussed with the Planning Commission in December. I think that this is a topic that the Planning Commission wanted to discuss further. I would say that I think it's going to be very difficult to be able to talk about proposed legislation later on this evening when there's a permit which is in play and you're needing to avoid any ex parte contacts.
I understand. Excellent. Thank you for that feedback. One other clarification. I think there was reference to the ORS as in the definition of transient. What's the relationship to ORSs to the Astoria Development Code with regard to the motel assertion?
The ORS requirements are based on the statewide planning goals. And the statewide planning goals are what our comprehensive plan has to be consistent with. And then our comprehensive plan is implemented by the development code. So we need to be consistent with those different definitions. The hotel, motel, the new transient lodging definitions in the city code are consistent with the ORS definitions. Now keep in mind that the applicant indicated that the residents that come to stay and work here are here for at least 7 months.
And what happens those other 5 months is a question either of staff or the applicant. What happens on that site for 5 months?
You'd have to ask the applicant.
Is it appropriate to do that?
Public hearing is still open. If you have a question for the applicant?
I guess I would open
that. Part of his rebuttal?
Yes, please.
If you don't mind, we're going to bring Mike back up and answer that question.
President Moore, commissioners, staff. So our fishing season, as I indicated last week, is a 7 to 8 month cycle. You have spring, May, and then it hits through about November. And then there's a little lag time, and crab season kicks in, and then whiting is sort of goes throughout. But there will always be somebody on site. It's too valuable a facility in terms of just locking the door. So we might have a few people there, but it's when we bring in workers because of the season and when it opens prior to that, we'll have people throughout the year, but there won't, it'll be a limited staff.
My concern is that it would not be vacant.
Pardon?
My concern is that it not be vacant.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Thank you.
It's too valuable of us. If I were the seller or the leaseor, I would make sure it's protected, and that's what we need to do.
Thank you. Okay. Does the commission have any further questions or need of information from the applicant? All right, at this time, I will close the public hearing, and we will begin commissioner debate. We can still interact with staff, yes. So I would ask the commission at this point, I have two asks of the commission. First, it was raised that this may actually be a use covered in the development code under motels, and that the commission may want to consider whether or not this use is consistent with the development code's definition of a motel, and should it be evaluated as a motel? Is there any argument from the commission in favor of that? I'll start if nobody wants to jump in. I would argue that because the residents are not transient, they are intended to stay for a longer duration, that it would not be a motel use. And that a temporary use is appropriate.
I would concur with that too. The 7 month, 5 month nature of it is a really kind of unique spin on transient, but to me it's more of a place based for a sustained period. So I would agree with President Moore.
I concur.
Do you have a thought on that, Commissioner Price?
I do. Just let me ask you, how do you, the ORS defines transient lodging in a couple of ways. One is a place where people stay for less than 30 consecutive days, and the other is that services normally offered by hotels, including but not limited to daily or bi-daily maid and linen service, a front desk and a telephone switchboard are provided regardless of the length of occupancy of a person. And again, this is, I'm just reading from Ms. Adams' testimony that they will have housekeepers, there will be linen services and shuttle services, etc.
Thank you, Commissioner Price. My thoughts on that are that our development code does not on its face appear to conflict with the Oregon revised statutes that are cited. But doesn't necessarily mean that we should, that where our development code may be more specific, they do not conflict. And so where in our development code the transient is considered 30 days or less, then this use is clearly intended for more than 30 days. That makes sense. So it appears there's a majority that wishes to pursue this as a temporary use. So then the second ask of the commission then would be the applicant's request that we take a quick straw poll, a non-binding straw poll, of whether or not we're leaning one direction or another on approval or rejection. Just whether or not they would commit the time and resources right now to write up the specific language so that they could get a final ruling tonight. So I will poll each commissioner and get some idea if there's any inclination one direction or another. Commissioner Cronin looked eager to share your opinion.
Very eager.
And you know, an impartial or undecided is a perfectly legitimate response. I'm not asking for a specific position.
I still have a couple questions for staff to qualify probably where I stand, but assuming those are met, I do have lots of questions or things that I think we are going to continue to talk about with the Good Neighbor Agreement, which sure. I think would be very important, but generally it seems like it fits the criteria.
Okay. Mr. Bryce?
Well, I have wanted to approve this, but I've been looking very closely at the development code. Cannot at this time.
So you're leaning against?
Yes.
Commissioner Corcoran?
I am leaning against due to access and parking in that unique geography, and that's something that a good neighborhood agreement can address.
All right, so we should have a deliberation. We have two leaning against and a two versus two situation, if that were to occur, would be a denial. So let's have some full deliberation and come up with an answer as commission here. So Commissioner Corcoran, why don't you begin and outline your position?
Okay, I will. I was also, you know, supportive of finding housing in all different forms. And so that was the pressure. And so faced with a conditional use, while I appreciate the council's accurate praise of staff for being very good and skilled, the staff's job is to identify if a condition can be met, if it's the art of the possible. The Planning Commission is a community filter on that to ask, is it worth a conditional use? And the instruction that I have as a commissioner is to ask, is this condition going to be broadly beneficial to the community? Is it worth doing it for the broader benefit of the community? And so that's what I keep coming around there. And so when I think about the broader benefit, there's some broader benefit to having a certain segment of housing for a certain period of time during the year. But when I balance that up against the geography of the area, the requirement of having the bus shuttles, I just see that it would be a safety issue as well as access, even more than parking, that really brings it below the broader benefit to the community for me.
Commissioner Price.
Thank you. I had some of the same concerns and going through staff's findings, if you just take them, number A, the use is not classified in the development code. B, again, there's no specific category. C, the standard is not met. D is okay. E, again, sort of reaffirms A, B, and C, that there's no definition, so that's why it's considered asked to be a temporary conditional use. In addition, I do find the language, some of the, what is it, development code or this comprehensive plan 1.360, authorization of similar uses, which is discussed in Ms. Adams' testimony, and also the fact that in order to approve it, there are at least 13, I'm not quite sure how many conditions we're up to now, but at least 13, if I have it right, 13 conditions, which is a large number of conditions to really stretch to make this available. We also haven't really, sorry to be so inarticulate, Commissioner Corcoran sort of referred to comprehensive plan that asks about how the proposed application is in the community's interest. And while I can see that it could be, it's certainly in Warrenton's interest and perhaps in the broader, you know, Astoria as a city's interest, because we are so well connected and Pacific Seafoods is an important business to all of us here on the North Coast. It is, I don't see how it is at all in the smaller community's interest. And also, particularly, the comprehensive plan 035.2, which is that the quiet residential character of the West End will be protected through the city's development code. And this is in direct contravention to that. And as we've heard from staff, it may well be that at some future work session or commission meeting or council meeting, we decide that we are going to change the character of the West End, or perhaps the state will send another piece of legislation through that says everybody in Oregon's got to look like the worst parts of Portland. Fine, but at this moment, the development code that we have protects this area as a quiet residential area and speaks of the geography that Commissioner Corcoran talked about, et cetera. So for all of those reasons, I would have to deny this application.
Commissioner Cronin.
I appreciate, I think, the previous commissioner's points on those. I think they're really valid, actually, and probably why we ended up with 13 points in the Good Neighbor Agreement, at least at this point. Can I ask staff a question, if I may? Looking at the R3 zone, it states that's the maximum. Is somewhere around 26 units per acre. I was just curious, what is a unit in the code? And it doesn't, I'm assuming it doesn't talk about people.
That's correct. It does not talk about people. That is something that we would like to fix in the development code so that we can clearly understand how to apply the density to a particular piece of property when an application is for something other than a dwelling unit. And that's another reason why we looked at this as a temporary use.
That kind of touches on a little bit of some of the debate I had with the criteria versus some of the ability we have to look at the other impacts around the area. I'd be open to discussing some more stringent requirements if that would make alleviate some of the issues. Some general ideas, not that I'm necessarily in favor or against, but I could come up with our no outside cars, only shuttles for the residents as part of their employment or their housing agreements. Let's just remove that so there's no other cars. No gas. I don't know if that's something we can demand, so then there's not outside cars coming. It seems like there's a lot of confusion between buses and shuttles and the size and the scope of these. There's a big difference between some of the hotel airport shuttles that come and a 15-passenger van. Those are different scopes and sizes. I venture to guess there's probably bigger pickup trucks than some of those 15-passenger vans that go up that hill right now. So I could see maybe talking about more of that if there are particular things. But it seems that, as the code states, the conditions are met outside of some of the impacts they might have. I think we're in a little bit of a unique situation that the street behind the property in question becomes R1, even though it meets all conditions of R3, from my perspective. So,
thank you, Commissioner Cronin. I'll add my 2 cents, and then we'll have some back and forth with the commission. On this application, I've always hinged on the comprehensive plan 220.6, which is to protect neighborhoods from incompatible uses, including large-scale commercial, industrial, and public uses or activities. Now, that was touched on by the applicant, who interprets that as the incompatible uses being large-scale commercial, industrial, or public uses. My reading of that is different. I think protect a neighborhood from incompatible uses is the important clause, and those the large sum of incompatible uses include large-scale commercial, industrial, public, and other activities, but that is not an exhaustive list. So from the outset and through listening to testimony, the impact on the local neighborhood has been my primary concern. I do believe that this applicant is going above and beyond to address the concerns that are raised by this application and raised by the neighbors. And this structure was built as, you know, to house 78 people originally. And with a use that would generate more traffic than the few shuttle buses. So throughout this hearing, I have certainly leaned toward approval of this application with all of the conditions applied. However, there's a lot of conditions, and that's also kind of a red flag for me. So when we're talking about a conditional use that has a long list of conditions, it almost seems like it actually doesn't fit in the neighborhood. So the point I'm getting at is I'm on the fence. I'm leaning toward approval, but on the fence, could be convinced either way. So the question is, to my fellow applicants who are against it, could you outline for the commission exactly which of the criteria you have a problem with, and what that problem is, and whether or not it can be resolved through conditions or modifications of agreements. Mr. Corcoran, will you go first?
Sure. I'll point to development standards of the applicable zone, the R3 high-density residential, and other applicable use standards. All uses will comply with the applicable access, parking, and loading standards. And for me, it is access as much as parking, again, given the unique geography and angles and traffic and safety issues regarding that is the key thing for me. Although I do appreciate the changing nature of the residential community, but access, parking, and loading standards, because of the unique area, is what I come back to.
Okay, and these are applicable uses in the R3 development.
Correct.
Or development standards in R3. Okay.
Correct.
Commissioner Price.
Yes, there is that. There is also, from the comprehensive plan 010.5, how is the application in the community's interest? And, you know, so we can debate what does that mean? But I think it's clear that it's not in the interest of the local community.
Could you restate that section?
Comprehensive plan 010.5. And then also in the comprehensive plan in the zero area, 035.2, the quiet residential character of the West End will be protected through the city's development code. There's that, and then again, going through the staff report, the findings under A, B, C, D, and E, let's see where my notes, we have A, B, and C, A and B say that there's no category for this yet, C, the standard isn't met, D is okay, E, again, is that we're using the temporary definition until we can create another definition that would allow it, but we don't know that we will do that because we haven't had that discussion. So again, and then just going back to C, the standard isn't met, but it can be met with 13 plus conditions, and I also have a real problem with, I just think that when you have that many conditions, and that the conditions also are, it's not just minor landscaping things. These are big issues. We have good neighbor agreements. There's the parking is very big. The shuttle buses, all of that. It's all they're quite a number of things, and they're fairly big. And I just think we're not ready for this. Our development code is not set up to approve this, in virtually any way. Nor is our comprehensive plan.
Thank you, Commissioner Price. Commissioner Cronin, do you have any other remarks?
I still share, I think, some of the concerns that are there from the previous two commissioners. I'd like to say we could probably address the parking and shuttle issue if that were the only issue. And my mind goes, if we don't approve this, then what is a use for this building in that zone? And does that mean that it's vacant forever? Which isn't necessarily a reason to approve or deny this right now, but where my head goes to there, how do you deal with those ever? I guess we can build a fancy hotel, as was proposed by one of the public testimonies.
Or we'll likely revert back to group housing or nursing home or something of that nature.
Mm-hmm. And so what I was leading to is the number of people change the two previous commissioners? I mean, we are looking at a year by year. Is there a number that changes the mind? Or is this just no matter if there was five people in there or 80, it doesn't work? I'm sure there's a number that would only be viable for the applicant. There's a minimum number, I'm sure.
Sure.
Venture that, but.
That might have been an interesting question, what the minimum viable occupancy would be. So, Commissioners Price and Corcoran, Commissioner Koenig is asking if the number is reduced, and there's some fact behind making that decision of a smaller number, would that impact your decision? We could make a condition of fewer than 80. Or would you like to make a motion?
So, President Moore?
Yes, Mr. Estes.
If you're asking for a motion, I think I need to.
Would you like to clarify what our...
Yeah, so yes. I needed to phone the city attorney on this matter, so I've spoken to Mr. Henningsgaard.
Okay.
Having situations of split votes, if that's where it heads tonight, 2-2, has happened recently with another commission. As you noted, that would mean it would be a denial. However, staff would return with findings that make the arguments on both sides of the cases. That being said, when those revised findings will be brought back to your next meeting, Mr. Womack, who is not here today, is able to listen to the tape and vote, and thereby break the tie. And procedurally, that was my question to the city attorney. And the answer from the city attorney is, because you have to come, you do not have findings before you tonight to consider. You have to have them brought back to you for the action that you're taking. You don't have findings for denial tonight.
Wait, that's in case of a split decision.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so I just wanted to place that out there. And what staff would have to do in that case is actually have three sets of findings available for the Planning Commission to consider.
And the third set of findings would be?
One would be, we do not know, I do not know whether Mr. Womack is going to be at the next meeting at this point in time. And then a set of findings for approval and a set of findings for denial. So procedurally, that is the space that we're at at this point in time.
Where are we on the 120-day?
The applicant has extended that to the 26th of April. And I've done the mathematics, and if this came back to your February 25th regular Planning Commission meeting date, we would be looking at having a, unless the council set a special meeting, having the hearing at their second, if there was an appeal, which we have to be able to account for with the 120-day rule, would be at their second meeting in April and be within the deadline.
And be within the deadline?
Yes, within the same week.
Well, staff is overworked to begin with, and I don't like to give staff additional work, but I can't and I won't let that persuade me to do something that I think is right or wrong, you know. So, but thank you for that. I mean, it's very interesting.
No, I mean, this is not, this was really meant to be able, I don't want there to be a surprise later on.
Yeah.
Because my whole thing is I didn't want there to be a vote.
Yeah.
And you not be aware of the legal circumstances.
Sure.
And procedural route,
right,
that wouldn't be taken.
Right. And, Commissioner Cronin, he's just won't call me Dave, makes a good point. I mean, I honestly do not right now know whether if Pacific Seafood wanted to say, we could do 40. 40 would be an okay number for us. I don't know what the community would think about that. I don't know what I think about that. I don't know what Pacific Seafoods thinks about that. But I do know that it would have to be a very low number, no more than 40, for me even to take the time to reconsider.
Would the commission entertain a continuance? I know the applicant was hoping for a decision tonight, but if we continue this to a future meeting, we may or may not have more commissioners to break a tie, if there were to be a tie, or would someone like to make a motion now? Either way.
Just in terms of discussion, me thinking, given the unusual nature of the split decision, I came here to make a decision today, but given the way that things have unfolded, the notion of some continuance or punting a little bit would be acceptable to me, given all the moving parts.
So with that, if you continued the deliberations to your regular meeting of February 25th, staff would be looking at preparing findings for the Planning Commission to consider that evening, and assuming Mr. Womack were going to be present, we would have two sets of findings. One for approval based upon what we've heard here tonight, and another one with denial based upon what we've heard here tonight. And we would then need to make any changes to those findings at that meeting to be able to stay within schedule of the existing 120-day rule, to be able to provide adequate time if an appeal were filed to City Council.
Do we know the status of Commissioner Henry as far as coming in back into the conference?
I do not know, but also...
But then we might have six.
I do not know. Yeah, she hasn't been a part of it. I don't know the answer to that.
Thank you.
If we continue it, can we reopen the public hearing or no?
Well, the public hearing has been closed, and the commission would need to decide if they wanted to continue the hearing, but That's your determination. You know, I would ask, do you have the information that you need to be able to make a decision?
Well, the main reason I asked that was if Pacific Seafoods was to come back between now and then and say, okay, we're going to go down to X number, to see whether that makes a difference to the commission. I would like to know whether that makes a difference to the community as well.
I'll tell you that the challenge of having additional testimony at the next meeting and needing to develop findings at that same meeting based upon all the testimony received is virtually impossible.
Why do you have to develop new findings?
Because whenever there is testimony received, there may be items that need to be included and responded to in the document.
So we had the new testimony come in between the last time and today, but it's still the same findings.
But correct. We don't know which direction you're going to head. You may have two different directions. I mean, and you're talking now about changing the number, asking the applicant to change the number. Chair Moore, can you do a recess and maybe staff can
sure.
convene with the applicant for a moment?
Yes, we'll recess for 5 minutes. It is 9:28. Okay, it appears members are back in the room, so we'll reconvene the meeting. It is 9:51.
Okay, Chair Moore.
Mr. Estes, do you have some...
Yes. So, as was noted earlier in the evening, there was discussion about providing final written rebuttal. That is something which is, if requested, is to be granted by our development code as well as Oregon revised statutes. In this case, the applicant has now requested final written rebuttal to be provided to the Planning Commission. So the deadline to be able to provide that final written rebuttal would be a week from today. That would be February 11th at 5 p.m. Under this scenario, the Planning Commission would reconvene at your regular meeting on February 25th. Staff will have two or three sets of findings depending on whether or not Mr. Womack will be present at the next meeting. And you will then deliberate at your February 25th Planning Commission meeting based upon the testimony received. The 120-day rule will remain as is under this scenario. There was discussion earlier from the Planning Commission about reopening the hearing. It would be staff's recommendation that the hearing not be reopened since the 120-day rule is not being extended, because we need the ability to be able to respond to any materials that are provided. I've spoken to the city attorney and he has stated that the applicant requesting final written rebuttal should be granted by the Planning Commission to be in compliance with development code and state statutes.
And that's a minimum of 7 days then?
Well, it is 7 days. Seven days. So what you would be doing tonight is continuing this matter for the applicant to provide final written rebuttal on the date I'd given with the time specified, and reconvene at your next regular meeting on February 25th for final deliberation.
Thank you, Mr. Estes. Commission, is there any more deliberation that you would like to share tonight? Do I have a motion to continue the deliberations?
I move that the Astoria Planning Commission continue the deliberations of the Planning Commission on the request for a temporary conditional use request CU 19-21 by Pacific Seafood, pending adoption of revised findings of fact at our next regular meeting scheduled for February 25th at 6:30 in the City Hall Council Chambers.
Correct, and that the applicant be provided final written rebuttal.
And that the applicant be provided final written rebuttal.
To be submitted by 5 p.m. on February 11th, 2020.
To be submitted by 5 p.m. on February 11th, 2020.
That's correct. And again, just to note, you will have multiple sets of findings for you to be able to consider.
I second.
Moved by Commissioner Corcoran, second by Commissioner Koenig. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
So nothing needs to be read into the record.
Right. So we'll move to our next agenda item. The Astoria Planning Commission will hold a special work session tonight with a presentation by City Planner. I believe there was a request